Talk to me.
Just say it. Just fucking say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little shit. Don't you ever raise your voice at me. I am your mother.
No. Mustn't do that.
Goddamn fucked up horror picture.
What's that like the taste of butter? A pretty dress. What's that like to live deliciously?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Bela Lugosi's Undead. I'm AJ.
And I'm Spooky Ryan.
And today we are drafting because drafts are awesome. And also A24 is awesome. And we are ready to get into the new movie, right?
Like, yeah.
Talk to Me is about to come out or has come out by the time you've heard this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was at its South by Southwest premiere and it was electric, to say the least.
Wow. And
so I'm very excited for the world to see this movie.
Yes.
It's like a nasty little grief, trauma, like psychological breakdown, but it's like way more than that. I'm very, very excited for this one to see how the general public reacts.
Very much an A24 movie then, huh?
To put it mildly, yes. It's also that what I think... When I look back on my life and I think about myself as a young teenager and me and my scumbum friends, sure. I feel like we don't always get the representation in film and television that we should. Sure. And let me tell you, Talk to Me has some grade A scumbum teenage like shenanigans.
Nice.
So it really, really works on that level alone. And so everything else, the horror that kind of surrounds it is just like great. It's like, hey, what if a bunch of kids do something that is clearly bad for them until they take it way too far? And that is Talk to Me.
That is also teenage life, just generally.
Exactly, right? Like, you don't see it. I mean, like, yeah, we're used to in horror movies, you have, you know, your Jasons that are just like mowing through a bunch of kids doing drugs and having sex or whatever.
They don't really deserve it, though. They're just like living their best life.
Yeah, these kids are like, we know a rule. We're not supposed to break this rule. Mm-hmm. We're going to break this rule on accident because obviously it was always going to happen. Nice. And then they let demons out.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's a bloody, nasty little flick. It's extremely polished for a first-time movie. Mm. The filmmakers are like YouTube guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're like a super popular YouTube channel in Australia. Mm. And they got together and made this freaking movie that's dope as shit. I cannot wait for you in particular to see it. I think you're going to love it.
Nice. I'm very excited. Right. When is it releasing?
It's releasing, I believe it's July 28th.
So it's right around the corner.
Yeah, it is. It is like this week we get Mission Impossible, just so you guys can date when we're recording this. Sure. Next week we get Barbenheimer, and the following week. We get
love that so much.
Talk to Me in the Haunted Mansion. Okay. I'm doing the Barbenheimer double feature.
Are you doing it?
Yeah. So no, I'm going to be seeing Oppenheimer a few days early. Nice. But I also have friends who want to see Oppenheimer, so I am seeing it after I watch Barbie with Rachel on Sunday. So
nice.
It's gonna be a lot. Nice. It's going to be a lot. I'm going to have 5.5 hours in the movie theaters a day.
Oh my gosh, crazy.
Putting your regular 9 to 5 hours at the theater. But nice. With Talk to Me coming out, we also wanted to make sure that we celebrate what we think is one of the iconic just studios right now in making horror movies. Obviously, you've got your Blumhouses and you've got Universal making some really interesting horror stuff. But A24 has established its own brand.
Right. Absolutely.
So what was kind of like your introduction to A24 as a brand in general, Ryan?
Ari Aster, honestly. I mean, you know, Hereditary and Midsommar, and then I started being like, wow, okay, what else are they pumping out here? And then obviously, you know, Witch and Green. Honestly, there are so many movies that I'd watched before that I didn't even associate with A24 until
that makes sense.
Until Ari Aster. So like when I saw Green Room, I didn't associate it with A24. You know what I mean? Just because I didn't. So you know, so that's kind of my origin story. It's sort of Ari Aster sort of leading it into you know, A24 as a whole. How about you, Age?
Yeah, so the first movies that I was seeing with A24, I was aware of, like, Under the Skin. I would say the one that, like, officially tipped me over into hardcore fandom of the A24, as pretty much every male cinephile is at this point. I would say the one that tipped me over was Moonlight. Was like, these people just, like, know what they're doing. They're creating these really intimate, small stories.
Yeah.
And I had been aware, obviously, with Ex Machina that year and, you know, The Witch and Green Room. They had, like, slowly been already building this really interesting catalog. And then Moonlight comes out. And that's, like, for reference, it's, like, one of my top 15 movies of all time. So, to me, it was just like, okay, this studio's got it. Now, I do think that in the years since, they've come and gone with some of their hits and misses. But then you have, like, The Hereditaries and you have The X and Pearl and these, like, giant, very popular movies. But you also have a lot of really unsung hits. And I think that's where A24 does deserve more credit. Because even though I think that it's become somewhat of a joke for cinephiles to adore A24 and its aesthetic, and all of their movies are like idiots doing dumb shit in Florida.
Sure.
Spring Breakers.
Sure.
I do think that there's something to be said about the fact that they are giving filmmakers the ability to make these movies that they may not be making otherwise. I also think that Neon and some of the other studios that have popped up around them have taken some of their mojo. So the question is always, like, what is A24 going to do next? I think this last year, with Everything Everywhere All at Once just dominating the Oscars, proves that they can still nurture and give people the ability to really go nuts in a way that a big studio can't. Like, even Focus Features, that works under Universal, their independent movies just aren't as weird or crazy as A24. I think that's a benefit for A24, is that they have established this now brand to be an auteur filmmaker location. And even when they're partnering with Apple or they're selling $50 candles,
right?
All of that,
or just googly eyes from
or Marcel Lachelle, right? All of that does eventually, you know, yield good results. So as much fun as we want to make of them, the power of the movies they do make is undeniable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a big debate that me and AJ sort of had, because I didn't even think about all the A24 movies that weren't horror movies when he asked me that question. But Ex Machina was like a big debate. AJ was like, nope, not a horror, can't be on the draft. And I was like, all right, fine.
I just feel like it's a very much a very sci-fi film.
Sure,
I understand it's got like thriller tension, but it doesn't necessarily make it horror. We will continue to debate this forever.
Yeah. Right. So how do we start this, Age? What do you want to do?
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and get a coin flip, and I'm going to go ahead and let you call it.
All right. I'm going to say heads.
You're going to say heads? Okay. And flipping. Boom, you got heads. So do you want first pick or second pick?
I'm going to get first pick. Are we doing a snake?
No, I'll just go back and forth.
Why would I? I'm gonna
say it's a good point. It's a good point, yeah. If we had more people, we would do a snake draft, because it's just you and me. Then I'll just do a normal draft.
So I get first pick. So I think, I don't know if AJ would have picked the same one, but the top movie for me, my favorite movie of all time, Hereditary, is coming off the board. Yeah, this movie is just, I think it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Anytime I date anyone, even if they hate horror or not, I'm like, this is a movie that we're going to have to watch, and I'm sorry. Because it is such a great depiction of grief and loss and trauma, and then spooky witchy shit happens. And I'm like, yes, that is perfect. And like, honestly, Hereditary is kind of the movie that like sparked horror for me as like something that could be, because what I really love about horror is that it uses fear to tell human stories, right? It uses grief and trauma and horrible things to tell human stories, right? And I think Hereditary picks up on that just so perfectly. And so coming off the board, number one, Hereditary. AJ, do you have anything to talk about with that movie?
I mean, I really feel like there was a given. I think regardless of who got the number one pick,
right,
it's going to be, hey, they're going to take Hereditary. I think that the thing about Hereditary, it's still to this day, I can never shake it, Mm-hmm. Is that the first time I saw it, I immediately said, this is just an all-time, like, great horror movie. It doesn't really matter how you feel about different kind. It was just, like, instantly, this is entering the category of, like, The Exorcist.
Yeah, this is a fucking hard movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I'd put it up in the same vein as something like Don't Look Now. Like, there's just a lot of... It's drawing a lot of inspiration from classic 70s horror and 60s horror, but just making it fresh, making it a little bit darker than now that we can go even darker with this sort of stuff. Because like something like Rosemary's Baby, which it's clearly drawing from, is already an extremely dark film.
Yes.
But when you really like layer on even all of the grief and trauma that we firsthand experience in this movie, it is interesting how it's able to balance all of those different tones and still just be an outright scary shit movie.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, so no, a Hereditary number one overall pick. It makes sense. On top of the fact that we both already love it, it's also the highest grossing movie in the history of A24 until Everything Everywhere All at Once. So it's just really the most obvious choice for the spot.
Yeah, and I think if you want to hear us talk more about Hereditary, go back to our episode where we talk about Hereditary.
Yeah, exactly. we can definitely gush on this for days and days and days.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Wait, I want to do something. Can we talk about one-star reviews on Letterboxd?
Let's do it. Did somebody do a one-star review of Hereditary? I can't wait. I'm sure there are.
Yeah, everything about this is poorly done. I didn't even laugh once.
Didn't even laugh once.
Thanks to Amelia, I can never go into my attic again without half expecting to see a dead body, that bloody decapitated. So in short, thank you for this wonderful movie recommendation. One star review.
So one even star the one review. Star review. I don't think they quite understood. or they 100% understood and they're just like, great, now my life is ruined because of this.
Yeah, exactly. All right, go ahead.
So I really struggled with, if you went with Hereditary, what was I going to do to follow that up? Because there's a lot of stuff that I really love on this list. And it kind of got solidified when I did a rewatch this week of two movies in particular that I had to decide between that are just like the A+, like killer A24.
I'm like on the edge of my seat, and I'm sure anyone listening is.
I'm gonna go with Green Room as my number one pick, as my first round pick. Green Room, an absolute bloody disgusting slasher. Get out of the house, except it's actually a club of Nazis. An incredible performance by Patrick Stewart as the head Nazi, but really just like the entire cast and crew is so good.
Yeah,
it's directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who makes some really fucked movies. If you've ever seen Blue Ruin, if you saw his one that he did for Netflix a few years ago that features like just one of the most devastating shootouts in the history of any movie I've ever seen. But Green Room is just like another level of like just grime, and it also felt so real to a music scene that I used to love.
Yeah,
and so everything about Green Room just like it just hits so nostalgic, and also it's so punk rock and so bloody. I love it. I just love
my favorite scene of all time is Nazi punks fuck off at the fucking Nazi like concert.
And another big thing for this movie is that it's only gotten better with time in terms of the talent. Like, obviously, it already had Elias Shawkat was probably the most known person going in, maybe Anton Yelchin, as among the younger cast members. But like, Imogen Poots is still a big deal. Joe Cole, Callum Turner, like all these other people are bigger deals today.
Yeah, that's so fascinating.
No, it's I think Green Room rules. I think it's.
Yeah.
Fucking disgusting. And I think that it is a terrifying movie. And I just, I love it so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen it since it came out. I think it probably ages well because it's still super fucking relevant.
I hate to be honest.
I think it's more relevant today than
I was going to say. It's actually more relevant. And that's part of why I think I'm taking it number one on my board is that it feels more relevant in 2023 than it did in 2016 when it released,
which I feel like it was supposed to be a time capsule, which makes me so sad.
When it came out, I was like, oh yeah, cool, a Nazi movie, that's so crazy, they found felt like, this hole in the ground where Nazis were hiding.
I know.
And now I'm just like, oh, nope, that's a couple, in some places in America, that's just Main Street USA now.
Yeah.
It's a little terrifying in that regard. But yeah, and I think that's why I'm taking it that high, is because it just feels real today.
Yeah,
it just does.
Absolutely.
So, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Green Room cool. It is.
Green Room it is. All right. Well, I think AJ definitely knows, with him taking Green Room off the board, which one I'm going to go with, because I'm an Ari Aster super fan. So I'm going to take Midsommar. And this
nice.
Day, yeah, this daymare that we've been
yeah.
through.
That's what
go ahead.
That's what I love about Midsommar, is the whole fact that he went from the darkest movie possible
yes.
to one that is just like pure in the daytime slasher, bloody. Yeah. Again, crazy fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. The fascinating thing, like that dichotomy between his two movies, one where it's completely night and one that's completely day. And then again, Ari Aster kills it again by using this giant metaphor for like getting over grief and like moving past trauma and like finding your family with a Norwegian cult. Like, you know, so once again, using horror and fear to teach human stories. And I just thought that was so cool once again. So, and the one star reviews for this one are much more like legitimate. Like, people actually don't like this movie.
Oh, yeah, we skipped over the one star reviews for Green Room, which yeah. I can't believe anybody would do that. But go ahead and give your one star reviews for
Midsommar. I'm gonna try to find the funny ones. So so this one star review says, this review may contain spoilers. So does this girl have to mate with Payman now?
That's funny.
Yeah. LMAO. And those are our one-star reviews for there. Do you want me to go back?
No, I'm looking over this, the one-star reviews for Green Room, and it's just, I can't feel empathy for a single person in this movie.
Ooh.
So, geez. Yeah, that's a rough one-star.
I think they need to be a little bit more comfortable with their punk rock roots there.
Yeah, I know. Funny fart joke, unironically, commentary is lacking, themes are predictable, Stuart's accent is something. Whatever. Anyway, they're not going to be all winners.
No.
Like some, yeah, the A24 ones will be. I think something like Green Room just inspires more like less jokes, even on Letterboxd.
Yeah, because it's just so fucked up and dark. Like,
yes. But I will say another thing about Midsommar that, again, stellar cast, everybody popping. I think it's probably most people's introduction to Florence Pugh, who is now a yes. super duper star.
Yes.
You even have somebody working off the sideline, like the fact that Jack Raynor is great is awesome, but I was hoping Will Poulter would have had a bigger role in the movie. And Will Poulter, who plays like, I believe it's Mark, is the like little drug kid who thinks he's asleep with all the people in Norway. Like, it's just, I don't know, everything about Midsommar is like really upsetting, but it's brilliant on so many levels, and the visual storytelling is so good. It was crazy when Aster made them back to back. I think that's the other thing.
Yeah,
is like the 2018-2019 Ari Aster, just right? Like summer after summer dropping killer movies.
That is actually crazy. I mean, I still haven't seen Bo is Afraid, so I still have to see that, but it was just, I was so anticipating his next movie, so I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is that's just incredible that your first two movies out the gate are Hereditary and then Midsommar. Just crazy.
Well, I remember when I was listening to an interview with him after Hereditary started to kind of pop, that the interviewer was like, oh, so what do you have next? He's like, well, next year I've got this like other movie. It's like coming out, and it's you know, it's pretty upsetting, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll see how often I work in horror again. But this one's a little scary too, I think. And
a little scary.
He's like so nonchalant about something that would be like an iconic piece of American film in the last decade.
Is he gonna move away? I mean, is Bo is Afraid, would you consider it horror?
I would consider it horror, but I would say it's more surrealist horror than it's like active killer horror. Like, there's not a lot of death in that movie.
Sure.
There is some death, but not a lot.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's just like pure anxiety is the best way to put it. Like for 3 hours. And it's existential as hell.
Okay.
Like it is more of like a surrealist. It feels more like something like David Lynch would have made
than it does
a normal like Ari Aster horror movie, if that makes sense.
That's the thing I love hanging out with one of my friends is like every time we're in a really shitty part of Philly, he's like, I feel like we're in a fucking David Lynch movie. And every single time I say, yeah, that movie was filmed in Philadelphia. Oh my God.
There's urban anxiety within Beau's Afraid that is unmistakably like New York, LA, Philadelphia. Awesome. Like living in the city and being scared of everything around you.
Woo!
That is a huge part of the movie. So cool. Okay. Yeah. But so I don't think we're gonna be drafting that one today because we have talked about Ari twice in our first three picks. So I think, especially since you haven't seen Beau, I'm gonna go ahead and push that one off to the side.
Great.
It would have qualified though for this draft.
Yeah, sure.
However, my next pick is going to be the other big director in the A24 stable, and that is going to be The Witch from Robert Eggers. All
right.
So The Witch was a movie that I will fully admit I was not on its wavelength the first time I watched it. Like, I thought it was good, but I wasn't like, this is an incredible, like, generational horror movie.
Sure.
And then I've rewatched it twice since then. And just the most recent time, man, I was enraptured, like in a way that I hadn't been the last couple of times. And it just played for me on a level that I was surprised. And so, yes, it's always been a good film. But now I'm just like, I think the biggest difference was between the last time I saw it and this time that I saw it was that I visited Salem two times.
So you like the energy and everything.
I now feel like it is like not only the most like authentic representation of that era, but it is just at another level of like not just authenticity, but truly understanding the context of that moment and that world.
Right.
And just the sheer paranoia that runs through every character in that movie.
Yeah.
Felt also extremely relevant post-COVID.
Yeah.
So, again, it's just sometimes you have to rewatch a movie because it'll hit you different at a different time in your life, and The Witch just plays for me now.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So I really, really, really love that movie.
Awesome.
And it's dope as shit and also scarier than I remember.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. Yeah, go ahead.
I always remember the first time you see the actual witch in the woods. And I was like, oh, okay, I remember that. But I like forgot that she shows up like three more times. And then obviously you have the Black Phillip of it all.
Yeah.
Which is just like
dope. Which is dope as shit.
Incredible. Just an incredible moment. And also at like 85 minutes, it is much more manageable once you're like aware of what you're going. Is this a slow burn horror? I think that's the biggest thing.
I didn't realize it was so short. To me, it felt very long. Like
that's the thing, right? The first time you watch it, I understand how it would feel like endless. Yeah. But it is really pretty short in terms of other like horror films.
Yeah.
So I think that it just spoke to me on a level that I was surprised and I really loved it. And yeah, The Witch fucking rules.
Yeah.
It is 92 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, maybe I should go back and watch it again. I found it, I think that's like a split amongst the horror community again. I think I found it pretty boring. I liked it. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was beautifully filmed and beautifully done. And I thought it was interesting, especially because he took pieces of journals and things like that. And like, that's how he created the movie. He was like reading historical journals about this time and created a movie from it. I was like, that's pretty cool. So I like what he did. I think for me, just not a movie for me. Like,
no, that definitely is going to happen a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the A24 canon, where everything is like super high concept and just ridiculous. There's definitely going to be a lot of that. All right, Ryan, absolutely. Go ahead and take your next pick.
All right, my next pick is going to be a movie I just now saw on one of my flights over, is the movie Men. And I thought this movie had done everything that I wanted. What was that movie? The one with the glory hole. Glorious. Yeah. It did everything I wanted Glorious to be able to talk about and do. And I think, you know, reading some of the one-star reviews, I think people missed and misinterpreted, because it was about toxic masculinity, but it was more answering the question as to why it happens, why it exists. And it was more subtle that they were talking about it, but they were just talking about this intergenerational trauma of the patriarchy and how it affects each individual person at the end of the movie, you know, these people are birthing, and there's all these different types of toxic men that are trying to be loved, that are trying to be accepted, and this whole thing. And then at the end, you know, I don't want to ruin it, I guess. I can't ruin the fucking movie, but, you know, the line he says at the end of the movie is just so true. Like, at the end of the day, everyone just wants to be loved and accepted, and they're acting in ways that are wrong and bad and not okay. Right, and actually really fucking scary.
Yes,
right?
Extremely scary. Yes. So some of the things that these characters say to each other,
yeah,
are, if it wasn't for Hereditary and Midsommar already being right in this draft, they would be right the most like fuck thing you could say to another human
yeah
being.
Yeah, some of the stuff that the men say to this woman are horrible. And so the biggest thing is that these things that they're trying to do, they're trying to find their place in the world and answering this why question, right? And I had someone that I knew that was a female watched the movie, and of course the first time she watches it is from that trauma lens, and it's like, this is like, yep, this is an eye roll, this is horrible. And then I had her watch it from the men's mental health guy perspective, and she was like, wow, yeah, I would have never caught that when I watched it again. I was crying at the end of the movie. Like, I was crying at the end of that movie because I was just like, wow, like, that is it. That's why these men do these horrible fucking things. So
no, I definitely get that. Yeah. I think that men, the biggest thing for me that holds me back, and it's, I think it was an ambitious thing that they tried that yeah I just don't think works, is the CG on some of the other characters.
Mm.
I don't love that. And so like visually that created a disconnect for me, but to your point, all of the other things that allow, especially when I believe it's Rory Culkin is, Rory Kinnear is on screen. He is so good as the antagonist, but Jesse Buckley is absolutely delivering an excellent performance once again. She is one of our brightest stars.
Yes.
And her ability to just elicit emotion and empathy is nearly unparalleled. And so, you know, Alex Garland, who directs Men, he's also directed Ex Machina, also directed Annihilation. Mm-hmm. He clearly has very big ideas on his mind at all time. And so I would rather him keep taking big swings like this, no matter what.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for me as much as it worked for you, but the point is that it still works, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't think this is some failure of a movie like some people made it out to be. I just think expectations were off. The scene in the tunnel is like actually,
oh my god,
so terrifying.
That scene is really good.
And I do think that the end scene that you're talking about is like one of the craziest final moments of any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's
I want to talk about it so bad.
We're gonna probably do an episode on Men down the road, right, because
sounds good.
Especially with Alex Garland being, you know, the guy who wrote 28 Days Later, who wrote Sunshine. He has horror like through his career, in addition to his big sci-fi. So Alex Garland is the shit, and I love his work, and I think that Men is definitely something we have to cover in the future.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, I think in the, you know, in this time, it's really hard to talk about what he's trying to talk about. And I think he does it so well, where he does it from an empathetic lens of the female protagonist, right? He's still saying this is, you know, it doesn't justify, it doesn't make it right, it doesn't make it okay. It just is. It just is.
So I think this is a problem that I've seen a handful of times, because there's another movie that came out last year that I really loved called The Watcher. What I've noticed is people are like, oh, yeah, well, obviously we know that men preying on women is a problem. So why are you just making that movie again? Mm. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like people need to still get it through their dang skulls. So until like it stops being a problem, I think we should continue making movies about this.
Yeah.
And yes, we all, like, in theory, if you already know about this problem, then it's not speaking to something new to you.
Yeah.
But for other people, they need to see that message still.
Yeah,
like, absolutely. It's the whole idea that, like, oh, racism is dead, right? Like, it's like, it's not dead. It's still very much here. And, you know, sometimes you need people to explicitly tell you about it before, I don't know. Film is they're time capsules, but they're also a chance to tell a story forever. And until men stop gaslighting women, like sure. it's gonna continue to be a relevant topic. And so something like this, you know, yes, obviously men are bad is a very easy way to read the movie, but there's way more to it than that, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not, it just explains, because there's so many people out there that are like, why are men the way they are? They're just horrible, quote unquote. But I don't think he said that men are horrible, right? I don't think he said that at all. I think he said that, like, they perpetuate dangerous, scary things. But at the end of the day, that final line in that movie is what they're trying to communicate. That's what they're trying to communicate. And they don't know how. They're not given the tools, and they're not really, they don't understand how to do this whole thing. And I was like, wow, it just one line. How do you do that in one line? I was like, damn, dude, that was perfect.
Well, so, and here's the other thing, right? Like the way that you just explained it almost seems like it's being seen through the lens of them being like just a misunderstood antagonist. And it's not the way they're still antagonists.
Yes.
They're the bad guy. It's not, the movie never says men should be let off the hook for this.
No.
It just says these are the things that men do.
Yes.
For this reason. And
yes,
they're still the bad guy for it. They just need to figure something else out.
And that's such a hard line to toe, right? That is such a hard line to toe. And he did such a good job because he didn't empathize with them the entire movie. The entire movie was not about empathizing with them.
Yep.
It was just in one line. He was like, boom. And I was like, yes, that's what I wanted in Glorious. I wanted the men to get better, or to show the humanness of them. And he showed the humanness of these horrible, evil things that men do, you know? So anyways, one star reviews.
I would love to hear what they say here.
One star review. Very cool, Alex. Hope she sees this.
Oh, God.
Is that the newest one-word title, A24 slow burn psychological horror that actually an allegory of trauma and grief? Revolutionary.
This is what I mean, that like, yeah, there's this negative perception towards A24 for some of these things. I'm like, they're just making movies, guys.
If
they're
not,
what I do find, and this is a quick tangent before I make my next pick, what I do find hilarious is everyone's like, we need more movies for adults. And then like A24 is like, here's movies for adults. And they're like, it's too predictable.
It's too human.
My next pick is going to go ahead and be probably the most fun I had in a movie in 2022. That movie's X.
Ah.
I just fucking love X. I think that it is not, obviously, it's pulling from Texas Chainsaw and Grindhouse movies. Obviously, it's pulling from exploitation films of the 70s, especially like your Deep Throats and porn, just straight up porn movies.
Yeah.
And yet everything about X just fucking sings. It is hilarious and well-made and a beautiful film for the first 45, 50 minutes. And then when it turns, it is the best slasher we've had in the last decade. So yeah, X fucking rules. And we have a whole episode about how much I love this movie.
Yep.
All of the stars are just already even brighter today than they were then. I mean, Mia Goth has just been on an absolute fucking tear.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, and obviously another movie of hers might get drafted in a little bit here.
Sure.
But she's incredible. Mm-hmm. Jenna Ortega just got nominated for an Emmy for Wednesday, which happened after this movie. In our episode when we recorded it last year, we said, oh yeah, no, Jenna Ortega, she could totally be like a big deal. Big deal in horror. And she is now like a superstar.
Such a side character in that movie, which is fucking insane.
She hosted SNL. It's
next to Aubrey Plaza and like a reward reading.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like one of our biggest stars. And X again, just straight up, like I can put on this movie and watch it.
Yeah.
And you know, Kid Cudi is gonna have some women. Good for him. And it's gonna be fun,
dick, dude.
just really good movie from start to finish.
Sure. So that's awesome, man. Yeah, I think that we can go back and look at our X review and talk about it a little bit. And I think that's good.
Yeah, and as far as one star reviews for this movie, again, I don't quite get where they're coming from on these, but I mean, let's see.
Yeah.
If you like Mia Goth, keep it to yourself around me. I don't ask a lot. All right. I mean, I.
Well, he's not our friend, so.
Question mark, question mark, question mark. That's it. That's the entire. That's the entire review. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. X.
I know. I don't want to go with the next one because, like, we. But I have Pearl actually ahead of X, so I'm gonna go with Pearl next.
Okay, great. So yeah. We can just go ahead and just double up. So exactly. Mia Goth still killing it.
Still killing it. Yeah. I just felt like X like was a great. I was like, what's more than the slasher? And me and AJ kind of talked about it in our podcast over X. But I felt like Pearl was that was the movie that I wanted from X, right?
Yep.
And there was much more context and depth and all those sort of things. And honestly, after AJ talked to me about X, I went into Pearl kind of knowing more what I was getting into. And so I think that that movie was really cool. And getting the bat. This is the one time where I was okay getting the backstory on the killer.
I mean, the other thing about Pearl. Well, first of all, Mia Goth's like 10-minute monologue in the last act of the movie is inarguably one of the great performances of last year. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that a lot of people threw their weight behind Pearl as like an acting performance for Mia Goth. This is like this is her showcase tape, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people ignored the other people in the movie for a while. You can't anymore because the love interest, David Cornsweet, is now Superman.
Jeez.
So it's funny that at the time when the movie released, again, I was like, oh, well, you know, this is the Mia Goth show featuring a bunch of other people. And now Superman's in it. And there's a bunch of great Australian actors that are, I just hadn't known who they were. And as you explore their filmographies, you're like, oh, no, they actually make really good, great horror movies down there, too. So, no, it's Pearl is special. And Ty West making a fun Technicolor.
Yeah.
Just like Midwestern horror is so good. Yeah. I we just don't get enough. It also feels so unique in the genre right now. There's not a lot of Dust Bowl horror like this.
Yeah. No, and I agree.
I just love everything about this movie too.
Yeah. Hopefully we get some Dust Bowl house coming up at HSN.
Oh, so. God. Fingers crossed, right? I think whenever. I think back to HHN stuff, right? I think of Scarecrow the Reaping as like the ultimate version of this.
Yeah.
Except that was like light color palette, warm color palette.
Yeah.
Where something like Pearl is like bright and visual. Yeah. And you have like the giant reds and the yellows. And again, it's a little cliche to be like, yeah, it's Wizard of Oz, but
it kind of is.
but it kind of is. But it kind of
so,
is.
Let me go through the one stars. So, as with X, an aesthetic in search of a movie. And this other one's pretty funny. It says, "What one cigarette does to your body."
Oh, God. Oh, God. That's actually hilarious. Yes. And yeah, by the way, just again, I feel like I'm fighting all these people in Letterboxd. You know what's great is letting filmmakers be filmmakers and be visually creative.
Yeah.
Boy, that sure sucks when I sure hate it when filmmakers get to be creative visually. God, that's the worst.
All right. Go ahead, AJ. What's next?
All right. I'm gonna go ahead and if I was being honest with myself, I know there's a movie ahead of this on my list that I could pick, but I want to get into some of the deeper cuts. Of A24.
Yeah.
I'm going with a little flick called In Fabric.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've seen In Fabric. This is a very weird one.
Okay.
So basically, it is about a haunted dress that murders people and helps people. And it is absolutely batshit. I love In Fabric.
Okay.
It's from Peter Strickland, who's just like one of our low-key great filmmakers right now. I raved last year in our year-end episode about Flux Gourmet being one of my like favorite films of last year. He's also made Barbarian Sound Studio, which is a giallo about a movie studio. And now In Fabric is just another one. This dude makes some really weird giallo-y slashers and
very cool,
and I love this movie. It takes some really crazy turns. It in many ways it feels like an even more low budget Hereditary in some ways. Like it's not as scary as Hereditary, but it is still like a fucking bug nuts movie. And it's like one part Hereditary, one part Suspiria, And so I love this movie. In Fabric rules.
Interesting. Okay. I have nothing to say about it because I've never seen it, but I'll
that's
have to
okay.
Watch it.
No, I mean, I think it's one that you would enjoy. But okay. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like 1-star reviews for this one, there's just not a lot of people who have seen this movie, which is why I want to go ahead and pick this one, because you should.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the biggest compliment I can give to it. Somebody said alternate title, One Size Fits All, Sisterhood of the Traveling Dress Gone Wrong.
I love that.
Like, basically, though, yes.
Yes.
I can't disagree with that being part of the premise of the movie.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Yeah, In Fabric from Peter Strickland totally fucking rules.
All right, so where are we at? How many do we got in our
so rules? That is round 4. This is your last pick, Ryan.
Last pick. All right, with my last pick, I'm going to go Tusk. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, God. That would have been quite the swerve considering what's left on the board.
I know. Oh, man. I know that there's better movies, but I just haven't seen them. I know we still have the Lighthouse and Bodies, Bodies, Bodies and Slice. And I'm like split between like a movie that I liked aesthetically and like a movie that was deep, but I didn't really like.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with The Lighthouse, right? I like the movie. I think it was a really good movie, and I just didn't understand it. And that made me feel stupid and I hated it. But I think but I liked it as a movie. As a movie, I was like, this is cool. And normally when I watch a movie, I'm like, I get it, and I just don't. And some people have said it was based on literature and stuff like that, which makes sense because it's Eager, is that his name?
Yeah, Robert Eggers. Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Eggers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Robert Iger. Imagine Robert Iger directing this. This is crazy. Because Robert Iger's the guy who runs Disney. Robert Eggers. He also did the same thing that he did with The Witch.
Yeah.
Which is draw heavily from like journals and stuff like that about people going mad at a lighthouse. The thing that I love most about The Lighthouse. And full disclosure, I definitely thought there was no way you were going to take this. So that's why I took In Fabric last.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So fuck me.
Now you have to like scramble.
No, I'll be fine. There's plenty of other movies down here that I love. But the thing about The Lighthouse that I think is just absolutely boss is that I feel like it's very much like The Shining-esque, where it's just isolation causes you to lose your effing mind. Again, a movie that feels more relevant today than when it released, which is kind of crazy.
And I guess that's the big issue is I didn't have the context of the director. It may have just been a historically placed movie that's supposed to give you the same feeling as The Witch, right? Like, it's not really like it's not really supposed to be like a deep metaphor and stuff like that. I don't know.
I mean, there are some deep metaphors in it, but at the end of the day, it is just about isolation draws out madness.
Yeah.
And, you know,
which
with
I like
fart
that.
Jokes, with lots
like
of fart jokes.
Lots
so
of fart jokes.
Just so many farts. seagulls with one eye, maybe, you know, maybe Willem Dafoe's a mer person or a squid, who knows?
I know. So, I mean, I really liked the movie, and maybe if I rewatch it without like my pretentious lens, maybe I'll be able to enjoy it a little bit better. So,
to be fair to you, it is a pretentious shit movie. Like, I love it, but like, there's like 4 people on the planet I would recommend that movie to, and. Like, no, The Lighthouse, I was head over heels for this movie when it came out. The year that it released, Willem Dafoe was my winner for supporting actor. Wow. And Robert Pattinson was my runner up in lead actor. I love The Lighthouse. It's fucking nuts that I let you get it. I just knew you didn't like it very much.
So I know, it was either that or like, I was either there or The Killing of the Sacred Deer, and I really didn't like that movie even though I got it. So I was like...
Fair enough. That is a rough one, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
We might have to just do like a discard pile in a minute of other movies that are good but rough.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm going to go ahead and make
let me do my 1-star reviews.
Dude, go for it, sorry.
Okay.
Just the letter K.
And then there was another person that said, what the hell am I missing? That's how I felt, but not 1-star. What the hell am I missing? Like, so, all right, go for it.
My last pick in the A24 horror draft. Darn it, I really have screwed myself by not taking The Lighthouse last round. No, I'm going to go with St. Maud, which has the most upsetting final shot of a movie I've seen in a long time.
That was amazing. Yeah.
I think that this one definitely got buried by the fact that it came out during COVID. Like it came out in like February of 2020.
Oh God.
Yeah. It was during the weird time when A24 is like, we want to release this horror movie, but also COVID is actively happening.
Right.
And so they just kept delaying and delaying and delaying. And then the Oscars pushed back their deadline that year so that if you released a movie in like February, it was eligible for best picture in like 2020 year.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay. They added like 2 months to that year. So like stuff Judas and the Black Messiah came out and got nominated for Oscars, or The Father came out and got nominated for Oscars and won a bunch, right?
Yeah.
A24 thought this was an Oscar play, so they dropped it in that window. But that's normally when most people assume movies are bad.
Yeah.
So it got drowned out by the actual Oscar movies.
Wow.
And because it was February and it was a horror movie, everyone's like, oh, this is just a dumpy movie. Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
And they missed it. Everybody just missed the fucking movie. And so I think St. Maud is a film that A24 bungled in its release strategy, but has continued to find its audience now that it's available on VOD. And streaming, because it is so gnarly, so gross, and you're constantly questioning, is everything happening to this girl or not?
Yeah,
and the final frame kind of tells you yes or no.
Yeah,
but it is literally, you have to watch every second of this movie, because if you turn it off before like the very last second, that it doesn't fully work.
No, I agree. Like,
there's just a lot of questions that are still in the air. The final second of this movie is the best final second I've seen in years.
Yeah, that was a crazy ending. I just recently watched it. I liked it. I feel like there's so many movies that did, maybe it was in copying St. Maud, but so many movies that have done a similar thing, like a Fall from Faith. And maybe that's why we're getting these Fall from Faith movies, like, maybe now. Maybe now, but also we're moving away from it. Like, as a therapist, there's so many movies with like therapists as the main character, and some people are saying it's a secularization of society and this elevation of therapy. And I don't know if that's true or not, but like,
well, I will say we're recording this right after the Jonah Hill story broke, he's like weaponizing therapy to control his girlfriend.
Jesus Christ.
So he's like, I'm just setting up boundaries. I'm just setting up boundaries. I don't want you around other men. I'm just setting up boundaries. And it's just like,
Yeah, no. That's not how it works. that sort of switch is going on. But these Fall from Faith movies are kind of, they definitely don't hit me very, very hard.
That's right. That's reasonable. That, like, if you are not somebody who's overly religious, watching somebody struggle with their religion to the point where it breaks them in two, it is harder to connect with that.
So
I understand that. I just ultimately picked this one because I think a lot of the other movies we're about to discuss just very quickly are fringe films, and I wanted us to show a pure horror lens on this draft. And so I think the other ones that we can go through pretty quickly are just, you know, they're not quite horror, or they are barely, right? They're also playing in other genres.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what were some of the other stuff that you were considering?
The ones on my list that still made it, because I literally did five, because I was like, we're not going to make it past five. So
that's okay.
The Killing of the Sacred Deer is I had on there.
Okay.
Like you said, it's kind of rough. Like it feels like choppy and slow, and I don't know. It's like go ahead.
So Yorgos Lanthimos is like an extremely acquired taste.
Yeah.
And from movie to movie, it can be a real struggle. Yeah. I like Yorgos, but I have bought season tickets to him and I'm down for whatever he's making.
Right.
I do not think most people are in the mood for a Yorgos movie. Dude is a real weird guy.
Yeah.
He comes out of a film scene in Europe that is like all about like absurdism and realism, like simultaneously. So yeah, Yorgos is a weird dude. And yeah, I love his stuff
Yeah.
But I truly can't blame anybody for not liking it.
Yeah. And here's the, I mean, I gave it, when I watched it, I rated it a 4 stars. So I liked it, right?
That's the thing, right? I like Killing of the Sacred Deer. I also have it as, I think I have it as 3.5 star. Sure. It opens with a heart. Yeah. Like a real life epic heart. Yeah, no, this dude, I mean, his big breakthroughs are like The Favorite and The Lobster. Right. And The Lobster has like an all-time unforgivably upsetting scene that I can't get past. There's a dog involved. That was one that was kind of on the fringe of being included in this list, by the way, The Lobster.
Oh, wow.
But it is not technically a horror movie, but it is like another surrealist weird thing. And I'm sorry, I said his breakthroughs were those. Those are his mainstream breakthroughs. Right. His real breakthroughs are like Dogtooth or Alps or Nimic. The other, he's coming out with a movie this year called Poor Things that is either going to be extremely our shit or it's not going to work at all.
That's fast.
I think it's going to be extremely our shit. It is about Emma Stone is a child put inside a child's brain is put inside the body of Emma Stone in like a Frankenstein movie.
Okay.
And it also stars Mark Ruffalo and Willem Dafoe as the person who created her.
Wow.
And Rami Youssef and Jared Carmichael are in it.
Okay.
Like it is like a stacked as shit cast. And we'll see. But it's also coming out in September, so it's either gonna like really be good or it's gonna be like we're releasing in September because everybody needs a minute to like process this movie.
So my favorite review, this is in the popular reviews, and it's a 4.5 star for The Killing of the Sacred Deer. He goes, me drenched in sweat. The semicolon thing, what's the little two periods?
What's that called? Colon.
Colon, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes, where the fuck is the deer? The most popular comment on Letterboxd.
I just remember the trailer for this movie where the girl is singing. I can't remember what song it is. It's not Titanium, but it's like a Sia song.
Sure.
And I just remember being so upsetting. Also, I've never seen an actor eat spaghetti as upsettingly as Barry Keoghan in this movie. I don't understand why it's so upsetting, but he's eating spaghetti. That's all he's doing. It's not supposed to be scary. I'm like, man, this guy. Anyway, I would also, a couple of the other ones that I was looking at, like Under the Skin, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love Under the Skin, but I struggle with classifying it as horror.
Yeah.
It is and it isn't. It's also like sci-fi. It's also a thriller. It's just kind of uncategorical in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so I chose not to draft it for that reason. Now, Jonathan Glazer, the man who directed it, it made his first movie since Under the Skin. It is called Zone of Interest. It is about a family living in the banality of running a concentration camp.
Oof.
So that's going to be...
The banality of it, of course. Like
apparently it was a huge, massive film at Cannes this year.
Wow.
And it's just like about a family living in their little house and living out their lives. And in the background, you hear like gunshots and you see the smoke sacks.
Jesus.
And yeah, they just live right outside the camp. So that's going to be a movie that is going to be upsetting to watch later. Jonathan, and considering how upsetting Under the Skin is to watch.
Yeah.
Like, this dude really works in a very specific key.
Yeah. That's interesting. Did you get to see Life of Beth? Because I love Audrey Plaza and I did not see this.
I watched this years ago.
Yeah, it's like 2014.
Yeah, Life After Beth is like a comedy about Aubrey Plaza dying and then becoming a zombie and her boyfriend Dane DeHaan like is like, well, wait, we need to be careful about this, and like her parents are John C. Reilly and Molly Shannon, and they're like, it'll be fine, don't mess with Beth. Like,
okay,
and I don't know, it's mostly about her becoming a jealous girlfriend.
Oh,
and like if I remember correctly, he falls in love with like Anna Kendrick. I don't particularly like it very much. Sure. I think it actually might be one of my lowest rated.
Yeah, I think it was a 1.5.
Movies. Yeah,
I see his rating is like 1.5 stars.
Yeah, I think most people are probably like, this is fine, but I don't know, it doesn't work for me.
Yeah,
I just think that everybody has been and will be better at other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a couple others that like we kind of considered, like Enemy I had on the list.
Okay.
I'm not really sure if that's a horror movie. It's kind of another like surrealist weird movie. Sure. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal sees another Jake Gyllenhaal, the doppelganger movie. It's fine. Yeah. It's Denis Villeneuve who directed Blade Runner and Dune and Arrival. So it's like more interesting to watch it in the context of his career than it is to watch as like its own movie.
Can I read a review?
Go for it.
4 stars, 2 Spider-Men pointing at each other, JPG.
Yeah, like, but actually there's like a whole thing with a spider, with a giant spider. It's weird. I think it's worth a watch, but it's just kind of like, this is a cool experiment, but I don't really know if it 100% works.
Sure.
For me personally, yeah. I think most of the hype around that movie is because it's Denis Villeneuve, and he is like basically other Nolan. Like he's like European Nolan. Yeah. So people love him. Yeah.
Okay.
Bodies was another one that is almost like Scream. I don't want to spoil anything for you.
I know, I haven't seen it yet.
The cast is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it is so funny. When it's funny, like it has a devastating joke about podcasts.
Oh my gosh.
Like it made me cringe on the inside. I'm like, oh boy, they took that shot right at us.
That's so funny.
And when you have that much talent involved in a movie, you know, it's impossible to ignore. It's funny that Chase Suey Wonders is in that movie because Pete Davidson's in the movie and they're dating now.
Oh,
and
then
she also got cast as his girlfriend. On again, off again, girlfriend in his show Bupkis. So that must be where they met each other.
That's awesome.
And so they're living happily ever after or something. I don't know. Rachel Sennett's in the movie. Maria Bakalova from Borat's in the movie. Amanda Stenberg's in the movie. Like, it's a stacked cast. It's great.
I gotta watch it. I really hate it. It gave me that studio horror feel, and that is off putting to me. But I just gotta bite the bullet and stop being like a contrarian. So
I think that this one is more just like go in knowing that it's like it's a bunch of millennials just speaking to each other about millennial shit.
Yeah,
and you'll just be like, oh boy, these are like simultaneously like it's an excellent parody of like what millennial speak sounds like at times.
Yeah,
and also it's just like, man. Fucking kids are idiots, right?
Oh my god.
It is a withering take of young people. It's the best way to put it.
I love that.
And so I love Bodies, but again, it's not really like horror, and that'll make more sense when you watch the movie, if that makes sense. Yeah. So
3-star review, strongest character is the iPhone battery that lasted the entire night with the flashlight on.
It is honestly insane. It is insane that battery was just like, they also shoot like entire scenes of Maria Bakalova walking through a house with no power on, just using the iPhone battery light as the only lighting.
Yeah.
And so it like almost accidentally scares you as you see a person crawl through the roof.
Ooh, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's got some really cool ideas in it, but it's not necessarily like the scariest movie.
Yeah.
This is more like a nice tense thriller about a bunch of people fighting with each other.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. So, those are the other big ones. I mean, the only other one that I had on my list that I even considered drafting was It Comes at Night, which I tried to rewatch and I just couldn't do it post-COVID. It is about a post pandemic world where ravaged the I just couldn't do it. I just wasn't in the mood for it. So it may be as great as I remember, but I just could not do it right now. I'll be honest.
You gave it 4, I gave it 3 stars. So
it's creepy.
Yeah.
I think that its marketing is really bad. like the marketing made it seem like it was gonna be this like super fucking scary movie, and it's not that.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but I think A24, back to what we were talking about earlier, they get a good rap sometimes and they get a bad rap other times because of shit like that, where they'll market a movie as something it's clearly not, and then people go and see it and they're like, this movie is not this, and people get upset, and I'm like, I understand that, I can't even argue.
Yeah. you're right, I get it.
that's our A24 draft. Do you have anything else to say about this awesome studio, Ryan?
No, I love A24. Send us merch.
Because we can't afford it, because we're a podcast for free.
Exactly. Go ahead, AJ.
No, so A24, just so we kind of have an idea of some other stuff that may be on the horizon for them. Obviously, we talked about Poor Things already. That's going to be really interesting to see how that just responded to in general.
Right.
We drafted two movies in what's soon to be a trilogy, the Maxine trilogy, with Maxine coming out later. It's either going to be really late this year or next year. At this point, I'm thinking it's probably 2024. Just because we're at the point where if Maxine was going to come out, they would be like really rushing it. And I just don't think that's worth them trying to do. Yeah. In addition to Talk to Me, which should be out by the time we drop this episode, I think that Medusa Deluxe is definitely going to be one to check out. It's a murder mystery set at a hairdressing competition.
Ah, interesting. Yeah,
so it got really good reviews. So that's definitely something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see. They're doing a Wizards remake, which is fucking nuts. So Wizards is a movie from the 80s.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of so Ralph Bakshi is like this guy who makes like super transgressive films about just like pure sex. Like the thing that everybody knows is that Heavy Metal, which is parodied on South Park when Kenny goes into like the alternate like anime world and there's the woman with giant breasts and they fly on like a pterodactyl. Do you know that episode?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I probably do, but that I just love you describing it. It's just so
funny. Well, that's kind of like, so Wizards was a movie about like a battle between nymphs and like a super industrialized world, like the force creatures and the super industrial world. And the super industrial world found Nazi propaganda and then become Nazis.
Wow.
It's crazy. And they are remaking this. They said, yes, more of this one. Wow. So I am extremely curious to see what that is going to be.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting.
I mean, at least that's what they've described it as. If it's not that, then I have no idea what they're making.
Like,
so yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would actually be kind of hilarious if that's not at all what the movie is. And instead I just sat here and talked about Wizards, the action movie.
That's so funny.
But yeah, so those are the big ones that you can see in the pipeline.
Yeah.
I will say like the nice thing is that the and I think Robert Eggers has another movie coming out too. It's called The Front Room, but there's not like a timeline on that either. That could be next week, it could be a couple years. So apparently the movie is in post-production, so it's done. So it looks like Sam Eggers, Max and Sam Eggers, the brothers of Robert Eggers, wrote and directed the film.
Wow, very cool.
So now the entire Eggers family is in on the on the A24 experience. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So if you guys have any other questions, though, go ahead and reach out to us. You can hit us up at Bela Lugosi Pod on Twitter. But more importantly, hit us up on like Instagram.
Right.
Because we're trying to avoid Twitter use if possible.
Yeah.
So I think that we've fully departed. We'll hopefully have a Threads by the time you guys are hearing this episode.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely check out our shit.
Yep, check out our stuff, and you can check me out at Keep It Spooky 09, AJ. Yeah,
and I'm the Alan French on all social medias. Perfect. And then the other big thing we want to say is hopefully you guys have enjoyed our playthrough of Christmas in July.
Woo!
Xmas in July.
Yeah.
If you guys have any other ideas for stuff like that, we would love to hear them. Obviously, we would love to do theme months.
Yeah.
So we're going to do some other theme months in the future.
Uh-huh.
But for August, we're probably just going to do a handful of catch up over the summer slash hitting up some of our favorites over the last year. And then we'll jump back into it in September.
Oh, September. Spooky month. Spooky
season. I was gonna say, expect a lot of HHN content.
Let it begin.
Yes. All right. And with that, I'm AJ.
And I'm Suki Ryan. Keep it spooky.
Peace.